So let's start this cycle of lectures on algorithms for constraint optimization in the case in which the feasible region is a generic convex set F. So F is a convex subset of Rn. And F from Rn to R is our object function. Okay, so this is our problem P for this type of lecture. And in the previous set of lecture, we studied the optimality conditions for this problem. Okay, and if you remember it well, the necessary optimality condition to be a local optimum point was that the gradient at the point had non-negative scalar product with all directions d in the cone of feasible directions. Okay? So for all d, which are in the cone of feasible directions of the objective, sorry, of the feasible region at the considered point. Okay? I'm not giving you again the definition of feasible, of the cone of feasible directions, because you see that actually we can rewrite this optimality condition in this form, since all the directions have exactly this form, x minus x bar, whenever x is in capital X, okay? Up to the multiplication to a positive value, each direction in the cone of feasible direction has this form. Okay? So we are actually writing the same condition. Okay? During the lecture I will use both notations. Okay? According to convenience. Okay? In proof I will use the direction D, while explaining ideas and algorithms I try to explain x minus x bar as a direction. Okay? So in proof we keep a compact notation, otherwise we use this, which I told you is more handy because we don't have any abstract object, any abstract cone with an abstract definition. We have the concrete points of the region there. Okay. So algorithms look for, let's say, stationary points according to this as a definition. Okay? In unconstrained optimization, a stationary point was a point for which the gradient became the zero vector. Okay, at that point. Here, for stationary, point x bar, we refer to point x bar which satisfies this optimality condition. Okay? So, the idea of an algorithm is pretty simple. Okay? At each iteration, we want to check if this is true, or otherwise find a direction which has two properties. Is a descent direction, and at the same time allows us to keep feasibility. Okay? But since we are dealing with the cone of feasible direction, that means exactly that those directions are the ones which allow us to move away from the current point, keeping feasibility at least for a while. Okay. So the idea, let's say, at we have the current point xk. Okay. The idea is to find, let's say, a direction in the cone of feasible direction. So we are looking for some, let's say, x bar k in capital F, such that this color product is negative. So we look for such a point. Okay. If it does not exist, this clearly means that this optimality condition is satisfied. And so according to this naming, we could say that x bar is stationary for the problem. Okay. If it exists, we exploit this as a descent direction. Okay, this is a descent direction for the objective function, and we try to use it, and so we wish to move away from the current point along the direction with a certain step. Okay? Notice that if we want, this can be written also this way. Yes. Xk and x bar k are both in capital X, okay? Which is a convex set. So, if this tk is chosen between 0 and 1, by the definition of convexity, this belongs to capital X, to the feasible region. Okay? Oh, well, it belongs to the feasible region. Also, if we take step, if we take a zero as a step size, okay, but taking zero means we don't move, okay, so really we don't consider to take zero, okay. So, if we take a step which is between zero and one, moving along the feasible direction, made this way, we keep being in the feasible region. Okay? So, at the same time, since the direction is a descent direction and it is feasible, we can surely make a step which brings to a point inside the feasible region at which the function takes a smaller value. Okay? We know. Since it is a descent direction, if the step size is small enough, the function decreases. Okay? Well, we could use somehow in an exact or inexact line search. Exact means, well, we look for xk such that this quantity minimizes the search function. But to take feasibility, t must be taken between 0 and 1. Okay? So, a difference with the unconstrained case is that here we are doing what they call you,
how do they call it?
A limited exact line search.
Okay.
Or, for instance, we could use, and we will use it, our major condition. That is, to choose the step size in such a way that f in the new point, let me call it xk plus 1,
or
no, it's better to say xk plus p times x bar k minus xk is less or equal than f of xk plus
c1 times the scalar product
between the gradients in xk and this vector, this difference, the difference between this point and this, which amounts to xk bar minus xk times 2. Okay, I've just rewritten our measure rule. Okay? Here I wrote it explicitly rather than calling it decay. Okay? So we are doing the same method in which the direction is decay. So this decay here, we could call this decay. In both ways, we keep feasibility because the new point is feasible because of the convexity, and at the same time, we improve the value of the objective function. Okay? We decrease and keep feasibility at the same time. Okay? The difference with the unconstrained case is that here there was no feasibility required. Okay? So we added that. So our measure, let's say, is that plus obviously c in 0, 1. Okay? Okay, I'm focusing on our measure. Okay? Because, as you will see later on, if you take the exact limited line search, the result follows directly from the ones we can prove for the Hermitian case. Okay? So, I consider the Hermitian case. Okay? Beyond all computational aspects or issues for which an exact line search requires the solution of an optimization problem in one variable, while our measure just requires to compute the function in a sequence of points, there is also some advantage. You consider this case, and you will get the result for this as free, as a consequence. Okay? Is it clear? Chiaro? So, the point is that here we need to find a point that satisfies the Hermitian condition through a specific procedure, okay? You just, the algorithms require to find Hermitian with a specific procedure, which is, by the way, the most natural. If you remember, well, we know that our measure is satisfied by t which goes from 0 up to, at least up to some t bar. Okay? We proved, and this does not change, that our measure rule is satisfied whenever t is small enough. Okay? There's an interval going from zero up to some value in which our measure holds. Okay? We don't know if this value is bigger or smaller than 1, because we also now want the step to be between 0 and 1 to keep feasibility. Well, what is the most natural procedure? You take 1, okay? If 1 is here, we are done, okay? If 1 is here, what do we do? Well, condition is satisfied here. It looks like 1 is too big. Okay. You could take the half of it, 1/3 of it, some gamma times. Okay. Let's say you take t to be gamma for some gamma between 0 and 1. Okay. Does it satisfy the Hermitian condition? Yes, we stop. Otherwise, we multiply by gamma 1 again. Okay. And we get to gamma squared. Okay. And you keep reducing it this way until the condition is satisfied. Because we know that Hermitian holds in a neighborhood of 0. So we are approaching 0 this way, and sooner or later you are. This is just a bisection, okay? Nothing more than a bisection with some coefficient gamma rather than 1/2. Okay? So when I speak of a step size computed in such a way that our measure condition is satisfied, I mean a point which is obtained applying this bisection procedure. So you choose some gamma between 0 and 1. Okay. And you take t equal 1. If t satisfies the initial condition, then you stop. Otherwise, you replace t by gamma times t. Okay? And then you go back to checking whether it satisfies the Hermitian condition at point 2 here. Okay? Notice that t will be of this kind. It will be a power of gamma. Okay? X equals 0, t will be 1. X equals 1, t will be gamma squared, and so on. Okay? The step size will have this form. It will be gamma to some power, that is the number of sections you've been doing. Okay? So, I will exploit this form inside convergence proofs. Okay? So the reason why I'm saying you need to compute Hermitian, the step size which satisfies Hermitian condition with this procedure is exactly this one. Okay? I will exploit this form for the step size inside the proofs. Okay?
And in particular, I will explore the fact that if this is the step size, this does not satisfy a initial condition. Okay? Because when you satisfy a initial condition for the first time, you stop. Questions? Doubts? Tutto chiaro? Okay, so, actually, the basic idea of the feasible, of a method of feasible direction is exactly this one. We look for a feasible direction, which is a descent direction for our objective function f. And we take a step along that direction, a step which is between 0 and 1, in such a way that thanks to convexity, we keep being in the physical region. And the step size is chosen in such a way that our initial condition is satisfied. Okay? We know that if the step is small enough, step size is small enough, then our initial condition must be satisfied. Okay? So I can formalize this into an algorithm, actually into a class of algorithms, which are the methods of feasible directions. So this is the general method. First step, we choose a starting point. Relevant issue, the starting point must be feasible. Okay. So x0 must be in the feasible region, capital X. Okay? Because we want to generate a sequence xk of points which are all in the feasible region, so the first one has to be in the feasible region to exploit convexity. Then, if let's say the optimality condition, okay, sorry, we have k equal to 0. If the optimality condition is satisfied at xk, then we stop. We choose x bar k in the capital X such that xk bar minus xk is the descent direction for x at xk. Okay, now we have the direction. Now we compute a step size tk between 0 and 1, it can be 1 we want, which satisfies our initial condition, and we compute this point through this Armijo procedure. Or let's say
general bisection position. Then we can make the step. We get the new point xk plus 1, moving away from xk along the direction x bar k minus xk with a step theta. Okay? And then we iterate. So we update k and we go back to check in optimal. Okay? Is the method clear? We choose a starting point in the feasible region, and then we check optimality. If optimality is not satisfied, we choose a feasible design direction. We take a step along that direction, satisfying our measure condition, and we iterate. Okay? We have some properties that we have already checked while building the algorithm. The sequence we generate is made of points which belong to the feasible region. Second property, since we are applying our initial condition, we are doing a descent method. F at xk plus 1 is less than f at xk. Okay? So, by the way we built the method, we have a descent method in which all iterations xk are feasible. Okay? Well, there are a couple of things which are unsaid in this method. Okay? First, how do we check the optimality condition? Okay. In the unconstrained case, checking the optimality condition was easy. You just had to check if the gradient was zero, or let's say approximately zero. Here we have to check the scalar product for all vectors in the feasible regions. In the feasible region. An infinite number of vectors. Okay? An uncountable number of vectors. So, how do we do it? We must find a way to do this. Okay? Second thing which has been left unsaid is the following. How do we choose a feasible direction which is a descent direction? Okay? Here, I'm not saying any of the two things. I'm not saying how to check optimality, and I'm not saying how to choose a feasible direction which is also a descent direction. I'm not saying any of these two things. Okay? And I'm not telling you for the next 30 minutes. Different methods of feasible direction perform these tasks in different ways. Okay? So, a specific method of feasible direction just has to tell you how you check optimality and how you choose the same direction which is also a feasible direction. Okay? But there are some properties which are common to all methods which satisfy this algorithmic scheme. Okay? Regardless the way you perform these two tasks. Okay? Well, we have already seen two of them. The method is a descent method. The sequence of iterates xk is made by feasible points. Okay? There is also a third one, which is probably the most relevant, and which makes that convergence proof for concrete algorithms easy. Okay? And so,
actually, this is a proposition. While these two are easy, are obvious by construction, okay?
Here you have the proof of this, and clearly this follows from all we know from Armijo condition.
This is a property we have. Let's suppose, for the time being, that the physical region is a compact set. So the physical region is a closed set which is contained in a large ball. Okay? In a ball of big enough radius. Well, and let's call dk the direction x bar k minus xk given by the algorithm. Okay? Well, then we have this property. The sequences generated by any method of feasible direction satisfy this property. The limit as k goes to plus infinity of the scalar product of the gradient of f of xk and the direction dk is zero. Okay? Unless the algorithm stops after a finite number of iterations. Okay? If the algorithm stops at step 2, we have an optimal point. Okay? And you don't have to go. But suppose the algorithm generates an infinite sequence, then if the feasible region is a compact set, you have this property. Okay? So my plan now for today is to prove this property. And afterwards, to show you a first concrete method, so a way to perform the yellow and the orange stuff. Okay? And you will see that the proof of convergence, in that case, is an almost straightforward consequence of this property. What is this property saying? That in this type of method, the gradient and the direction you choose, okay, in the limit, tend to be orthogonal. Okay? They are not orthogonal because the direction is in the same direction. Okay? So this quantity is always negative. Okay? But it tends to be zero. Okay? It's negative, but it is convergent to zero. Okay? Notice, this is very different from the unconstrained case. In the unconstrained case, we ask for this quantity not to go to zero. Okay? If you go back to the theorems of convergence for gradient methods, one of our requirements were that these two vectors did not tend to become orthogonal. Okay? Here we have it. We have it, and we will be happy to have it. Okay? So this is a meaningful difference. Okay? Unconstrained case, we exactly want to avoid this. Here, this is what makes us happy. So, let's make the proof.
The truth is, okay, I would say it's 10-15 minutes. So we make the proof and then we make a stop, even if it will be a bit later than usual. So let's make the proof.
First remark, I've already done this remark. The sequence of values of the function and iterate is decreasing. So this sequence is a decreasing sequence. Okay? Furthermore,
f is a continuous and differentiable function, but in any case, f is continuous, x is compact, it means, by the first theorem, that f is bounded by below on capital X. Okay? The theorem, by the theorem, tells me that F has a minimum value on X. Okay? Since it has a minimum value, it is bounded by below. Okay? It is always greater or equal than the minimum value. Okay? So here what we have? We have a decreasing sequence, points are feasible, and this decreasing sequence is also is bounded by below. Since the optimal value exists and this is a sequence of feasible values, this is always greater or equal than the optimal value. So what do we know from calculus of decreasing sequences of numbers which are bounded by below? We know that they converge. Okay? A sequence of decreasing numbers, which is bounded by below, converges to some value. So, I'm not interested in the value. I just want to know that this sequence converges. It converges. I'm not interested in the limit value, but it exists. Okay, and now you will find out why I'm interested in this. Let's rewrite our initial condition. So, TK satisfies our measure condition, so we can write this as xk plus 1. Okay? In the algorithm. Xk plus 1 is less or equal than, sorry, f at xk plus 1 is less or equal than f at xk plus this quantity, which I can rewrite in this way. Xk f of xk minus f of xk plus 1. So I'm taking this on this side and I will take this on the other side is greater or equal than minus c1 tk times this color. And this is dk, okay? So, I have just rewritten our major condition. This is our major condition, nothing more, okay? Moving this here and this here, okay? And then making this short notation for the direction. Oh,
What is the sign of this paragraph?
The method is the same method,
so this has negative sign. So this with a minus is positive. So we could say that this is C1 pk times the absolute value of this paragraph. Okay? So this quantity is greater or equal than 0. Okay? Then, at k converge, so if we take the limit here, what do we get? We take the limit. This goes to the limit value. This goes to the same limit value, so their difference goes to 0. So this goes to 0 as k goes to plus infinity, because this is a sequence of convergence, is a convergent sequence. Okay? As a consequence, here we have something which is greater or equal than 0, and less or equal than something that goes to 0. So it must go to 0. So this limit is 0. Well, there should be a C1 here, but C1 is from our initial condition, the positive fixed value. So here I can put C1 and nothing changes. We have proved this, which is not what we wanted. What we wanted is that this limit is 0. Okay? If we prove that this limit is 0, we also have our result without the absolute value. So we have the step size which is giving us trouble. Okay? So all the proof is to show that this does not go to 0. This does not go to 0. Or let's say equivalent, that this part is the one going to 0. Okay? And the reasoning is by contradiction. Okay? So by contradiction, we suppose that it is not true that this limit is 0. Okay. We don't even know if the limit exists of this quantity, okay? But how do we suppose that the limit, if the limit is not 0, okay, what does it mean? That you have a subsequence of values. This is a sequence of numbers, okay? This sequence of numbers must somehow to be often greater or equal than a given value. I'm wondering if
This simplifies the proof. Okay, I will give you the proof that is in my lecture notes. Well, and I think it might be simplified.
Well, you know that the limit is given by
the maximum and the minimum limit, which have to be equal. Okay.
The limit of this quantity is not zero, or does not even exist, it means that the maximum limit has to be positive.
Okay.
What does it mean that the maximum limit is positive?
It means that there exists a subsequence, let's say KF, okay, such that this quantity goes to the maximum limit. Okay. The maximum limit is the maximum of all the limits of all possible subsequences. Okay? You take any subsequence which converges to some value, okay, and that is, let's say, the limit of that subsequence. Among all possible limits, you take the largest value. That is the maximum limit. Okay? If the maximum limit is positive, the limit cannot be zero. Okay, the two things are equivalent. So we, and also we know also that all of these are negative. Okay, so since all of these are negative, this actually means that this is going to minus theta. Okay, these are all negative numbers. Okay, so this is actually minus the quantity, so if the minus the quantity goes to eta, the quantity goes to minus. Okay, so if this limit is not zero, then we have this for an appropriate subsequence. Well, but this limit is zero. Okay? Let's consider just the subsequence. On the subsequence, this quantity goes to minus theta. Okay? How is it possible that the limit is zero? Well, it is possible if and only if this quantity goes to zero. So since this goes to that, we must also have that the subsequence of step size goes to zero.
Okay, and let's say it goes to zero plus because we know the steps size are non-negative.
Other ingredients. Capital X is compact. So this is contained in capital X, so this is a bounded sequence. Okay? I'm showing you that also DKL is a bounded sequence, because this DKL is nothing else than X bar KL minus FK minus XKL, but the norm of the difference of two vectors is less or equal than the sum of the norms. These vectors both belong to capital X. Okay? So, since they belong to a compact set, their norm is bounded by value. Okay. The norm of the direction is bounded by 2 times that value. Okay? So by this we also have that these things have so is bounded. So the sequence of the subsequence of iterates is bounded because it's feasible and the feasible region is bounded. The direction satisfies this inequality. So it's norm, the norm of the direction is bounded by twice the maximum value that the norm of points of X may get. Okay? The points of capital X are inside the ball of a certain radius. Okay? The directions are in a ball whose radius is the double. Okay? So also the sequence of direction is bounded. Okay? So what we have? A property of bounded sequences. They admit a convergent subsequence. Okay? So we can assume, eventually taking a subsequence, that xkl and tkl converge to some point. Okay? X bar and d bar. And x bar, since this sequence is inside the feasible region, which is a compact set, this limit is also in the feasible set. Also, since we can suppose this, we can also suppose that we know also that we have this limit. But this sequence is going to two values, so this must be equal to minus theta. Okay? This is the limit of the sequence, and this is also the limit of the sequence by continuity. Okay. Now we need Hermitian. And we know we need exactly this. If this is TK, or let's say TKL, TKL divided gamma does not satisfy the Hermitian condition. Okay? Because otherwise you would have stopped the procedure one step earlier. Okay? So this value does not satisfy Hermitian. Does not satisfy Hermitian means that f at xk plus kf tkl divided gamma dkl minus f at xkl is greater or equal than T1 times TKL divided gamma this time. Okay? We are almost done. Huh? It took me more than I expected, but we are almost done. Sorry, this is also a quick breaker. Because Hermitian is not satisfied by this step size. Here we can apply the mean value theorem. The mean value theorem says that this difference is given by the scalar product of the gradient of f computed at a point in the segment united these two points times their difference. Their difference is KKL times gamma dk, and so the point here is to some Okay?
So this is the invalid theorem where tau KL is a value between 0 and TKL divided by 10.
Okay? The mean value theorem says that the difference is exactly the scalar product of the gradient computed at a point
in the segment which unites this point with this point
times this difference.
And this difference is the direction multiplied by this quantity.
Okay? So we got this. And now we can erase this,
because it appears on both members.
Okay? So that we got this inequality.
The gradient of f at xkl plus tk times dkl times dkl is greater than t1 times this one.
Okay? Or if you take, okay, now you can take the limit. Let's see what happens to the limit. What happens to the limit is the following.
This goes to t1 times this quantity, because you take the limit here and you take the limit here.
Okay?
When you do this, okay, this goes to the bar, this goes to x bar, this goes to the bar, and this goes where? Well, KKL goes to 0. So this goes to 0 too, because it's between 0 and the quantity that goes to 0. So this goes to 0, so this all goes to 0. So it remains just x bar. Okay? And since we pass to the limit, greater becomes greater equal. Okay? And what did we prove? Well, this, if we want, we can write it. I can erase now the admission procedure. And we are done with the proof, because I get the contradiction. The contradiction I have is the following. We are proved that 1 minus T1 times the scalar product is greater than 0.
Okay. But if you remember Armijo,
T1 was taken positive and was smaller than 1.
Okay.
So this is positive quantity.
So, this scalar product must be greater or equal than 0, but this scalar product has also to be a negative number. So we get a contradiction. Okay? Where did the contradiction start? Well, the contradiction started supposing that this quantity does not go to 0. Okay? So this quantity goes to 0, and therefore also that quantity goes to 0. Okay? Because the quantity there is this with a minus in front. Okay? So, it's a bit of calculus.
Okay?
But, so, we have now this problem. There. Okay? The scalar product, the direction, the feasible direction, and the gradient of the function tend to become orthogonal. Okay? So, let's take a 5-minute break. You can ask me questions about the proof, and then I'll show how to use this.